Hello and welcome to Bat Flips and Nerds, the baseball podcast with a British twist. I'm your host, John McGee. Before we get going on this week's business, a quick reminder to follow us on Twitter at batflips_nerds and to subscribe and rate the show on iTunes if you've not done so already. And this week I'm joined for our end of season conversation, but sort of winding up conversation by North Wales answer to Brian Kenny, Mr. Darius Austin. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I feel like I probably need to step up my opinionated game maybe to live up to Brian Kenny.
Well, you're certainly there on the stats. So maybe you can give us some hot takes on the topics of the evening.
Yeah, and go as far as possible.
Yeah. And Richmond, I was going to say Richmond's answer to Benny Hill, but since he came in eating crisps and is surreptitiously trying to do it during the podcast, I'm going to say it's Richmond baseball's answer to Gary Lineker. Ben Carter.
I'm not sure which is more offensive. I'll probably take Gary, ears and everything.
You definitely want to take Gary over over Benny Hill, mate. Whether our American listeners will know who Gary Lineker is another question, because they love Benny Hill over there. They love a bit of the Benny Hill theme tune at the baseball, which is why I thought of you, Ben. Were you there for Richmond AAA's three-peat on the weekend?
I wasn't, unfortunately. I was following along online, but I wasn't there for it. But yeah, a very, very good team, that. Probably because I'm not on it. Can't help but feel there's a correlation there.
I'll say a friend of the podcast, Chris Brown, is on that team, isn't he?
Yeah, Chris is on that team, the bastard. He's very good. Well, our whole team's very good and deserved champions. Good to see one team from Richmond enjoying success this year.
Yeah, because we all know that the other one didn't. played under protest, I believe. A bit of controversy in the world of the NBL with an ineligible player apparently playing at catcher for the opposition there.
Just another day in British baseball.
Yeah, so you understand. And another day of japes and fun. So congratulations to Richmond AAA for the win at the weekend, and also to the London Mets who won their second NBL championship in a row. Good work, guys. But we're not going to talk about those Mets today. We are going to talk about some other Mets, because we have had, for the first time in a long time — I was trying to think if it was the first time ever, it's certainly the first time in as long as I can remember — some breaking news for us to respond to just before we recorded a podcast. And that is the news that the Mets third baseman and captain David Wright has today announced that he will be activated by the club on September the 25th in order to play in the club's final game of the season against the Marlins on September the 29th, following which he will be retiring, or at least be indefinitely inactive. I believe the phrase retirement was not actually uttered during the press conference this afternoon, but it was clear that that was what was being intimated. So Captain America will retire as a Met, a career-long Met with 7 All-Star appearances, 2 Gold Gloves, having hit 242 home runs with a slash line of 296, 376, 867, and with 4-5 WAR seasons. So the question for you two luminaries is what's the legacy of David Wright? Is this a Hall of Famer? Is it a retired number out on the City Field second deck? Or is David Wright ultimately going to be remembered as an unfulfilled talent, Ben?
I'll let Darius address the Hall of Fame a bit, because off the top of my head, I'm not sure how his career numbers stack up. Obviously, he was very good for a long time for that Mets team, and was the leader both on and off the field, and someone who I think Mets fans will have fond memories of, regardless of the last few years of sadness and constant injuries. And it'll be a shame, you know, even as a non-Mets fan, or maybe one in disguise as I am, to see him go, because he's had some great moments in the Mets shirt. My fondest memory of his would be back in the 2015 World Series, when he came back and played that postseason back from injury and hit the home run in Game 3, and City Field was bouncing, and he's done some other pretty remarkable stuff for them. So certainly a Mets Hall of Famer. Whether he's a Major League Baseball Hall of Famer, I think he'll probably fall a bit short. But like I say, I don't know how his numbers really stack up career-wise.
What do you think, Darius? I do actually have it all of fame numbers in front of me. I've been quite organised in the last half an hour since this announcement's been made. So the average career numbers for a third baseman, by the way, David Wright has got the 23rd best career numbers for any third baseman. But for Hall of Famers, it's 50.4 career WAR. 40.2 7-year peak, so that's the best 7 years of their career, and 45.3. So that's right, by the way. Sorry, that's right. And the average Hall of Fame third baseman has 68.4 career WAR, so that's 18 more than Wright. 43 7-year peak, so that's 3 more than Wright, and a jaws of 55.7 over 45.3. Darius, you might be able to explain what jaws is for those who haven't come across that stat before.
It's kind of a sort of an approximation that combines the player's peak with their longevity, basically. Something created by Jay Jaffe, who's a great baseball writer and does a lot of work in the Hall of Fame. And it's just kind of trying to get an idea that, well, these are kind of the two things that maybe you want to look at when you're deciding a Hall of Fame case. Was the player, you know, one of the best players in the league for long enough? But also, did he kind of stick around? Did he have that longevity as well? And generally speaking, you need kind of both of those things to get in the Hall of Fame. And we've seen these change over time. So perhaps it will be different for Wright. But I think as things stand and as those numbers probably show, he is a little bit short. And not because he wasn't one of the best players in the league at his peak, but because the last few years have meant he hasn't really combined the career numbers that you would like to see from a Hall of Famer. And so I think what Ben said was spot on. He's unquestionably a Mets Hall of Famer. We actually talked about this at the first meetup down in London, the Baseball World Community one, that he's basically the Mets' best position player of all time, and it's not really close. But when it comes to stacking him up against Hall of Fame third baseman, he probably just needed these last 3 years or so of decent production, and I think he probably would have just about made it. But sadly, he's barely been able to get on the field, and I think it will be slightly sad remembrance really of, you know, what a great player he was, but also what got taken away from him over the last few years.
Is he not the type of guy who might be looked on favorably by the Veterans Committee in the way that Jack Morris was, you know, really good in the dressing room, good in front of the camera, a real paragon for the sport, someone who everyone likes, who was a great ambassador for the club in the way that Morris was for the Tigers, rather more pleasant human being by all accounts as well. So maybe is that probably his best shout to be a Hall of Famer? I would assume.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't dismiss it entirely. I think that might help him a bit more than the statistical case. He is, by all accounts, a really wonderful stand-up guy. So I think that there is a shot there. And certainly we've heard plenty of things over the last few years how Jack Morris didn't really deserve to be in the Hall of Fame based on his stats. So it's something to consider, I guess. But just on the basis of his career alone, I think he's going to fall ever so slightly short.
Indeed. I'll certainly be sad to see him go. As a player I had genuine fondness for, always enjoyed watching. A really good player. And as you said rightly, a really pleasant, likeable and seemingly stand-up guy. It has to be the most Mets thing ever, that when they're at their absolute nadir, this comes back and it is literally the cherry on the top of the shit cake that is the Mets season. Ben, you've obviously been following it quite closely, given this is a team you don't support.
Yeah, team I do not have any affinity to whatsoever. It's been just a lost season, hasn't it? Very amusing to watch Jacob deGrom get just annihilated by his own team, start for no apparent reason. But it'll make for an interesting discussion about the value of wins. Well, I think we're probably past that now, aren't we? But the only other thing on David Wright, I guess, would be to highlight how wonderful the phrase indefinitely inactive is. I think that's finally a phrase I can use to actually describe my sex life.
Is it because you're eating too many cheese and onion crisps?
It might be. How are you spending your Thursday afternoon, Ben? Eating crisps, talking about David Wright.
Well, maybe that's what you're missing out on. Maybe you need to be taking the David Wright chat out onto the streets of Chiswick and Southwark, respectively. Those are places that you can find Ben for all the ladies listening. We're going to talk about DeGrom, I think, because the other topic I wanted to talk about before we get into listener questions is end of year awards. And I've already warned the two guys that this is basically just an excuse for me to talk about how Shohei Ohtani should be AL Rookie of the Year again. I upset quite a lot of followers over on our Twitter account about a week and a half ago. By saying I would hear no argument for anybody else. I think I specifically upset the Yankees contingent over there, and I just wanted to revisit that conversation. I'll call it a conversation that we were having. So I just want to run you through some of Shohei Ohtani's numbers, because they are unbelievable when you start to scratch under the surface. So he has, I will grant, played 40 fewer games than Miguel Andujar, who's probably the closest in terms of a rival for this. Of course, Gleyber Torres, and I think Joey Wendell are probably in that conversation, although a 28-year-old career minor leaguer, getting himself even into the conversation to be Rookie of the Year is sensational and redolent of what's happening over in Tampa this year. We'll talk about Tampa, I think, in relation to a couple of the other awards. But coming back to Ohtani, he has over half a win more in terms of Fangraphs WAR than Andujar, and that's just as a hitter. And he has an extra win as a pitcher. Of course, he only pitched 50 innings, but he got a full win out of that. Look, this guy, he could have played more, but he has changed the game of baseball forever. He's a complete one-off, and he's been sensational at the side of the game that he's supposed to be like worse at. He's got a WRC plus of 164. There are four hitters in baseball who have a better WRC plus than Shohei Ohtani, and they are Mike Trout, JD Martinez, Alex Bregman, and Jose Ramirez. Those are the four best hitters in baseball. Any notion that this guy should not be AL Rookie of the Year is, for me, just laughable. And I don't know if you guys want to try and talk me out of it, or if you're just going to, you know, stand and clap like on that terrible Skybet advert.
Ben's just going to eat crisps, I think. That might have the same effect as clapping. I think that Ohtani should get it. I think you're right about him being unique. I think it's an extra point in his favour, not that he really needs it from a statistical basis. I guess if you want to make the playing time argument, you can, but I don't think that really holds up, given that Ohtani's been asked to pitch as well as hit. And I think the fact, you know, there's something just extremely cool about him, you know, sadly going down with Tommy John surgery. And while this news is coming out, he's out there hitting a couple of home runs. I mean, literally, we never see anything like this. Usually these are just miserable days where we're like, oh, another one gone. Going to have to wait a year, 18 months to see this guy again. And we're literally seeing him out there on the field the same day, blasting homers. It's unbelievable. And yeah, Andujar's had a very nice season, but I don't think it's remarkable in the way Ohtani's is. And I think if Ohtani had got to hit for the full year, he would have blown him away in the counting stats as well. So yeah, I'm with you, John. But I can understand why the Yankees fans who've watched Andujar play third base for them pretty much all year would like him to win Rookie of the Year.
The other thing is he's stolen twice as many bases as Torres as well. Five times more bases than Andujar in 40 fewer games. Now, Andujar's a pretty big lad. He's not exactly a threat on the bases, but Torres is supposed to be. Actually, Torres has only played 10 games more than him. So that doesn't even work for me either, if you're trying to make that argument. Ben, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on this, or is there anybody else that we haven't mentioned who maybe warrants being in that conversation?
Not for me, no. I mean, I think the argument, I guess, the Yankee fans would make, they feel a little begrudged and feel like Ohtani maybe was crowned Rookie of the Year before the season even began, with all the hype and all the how good is he going to be, and this guy is going to be, you know, the next guy to change baseball. And to an extent, you get that, because don't get me wrong, Andujar had a great season and so is Torres. But Ohtani's kind of lived up to all that hype. It's not like he's been rubbish and we're all like, well, he's been trying, so we'll give him the Rookie of the Year award. He was a phenomenal pitcher before he got hurt, and he's been a fantastic hitter, better than I think anyone expected him to be all year. So he's won it on merit alone. And there is a kind of rich irony to the idea that Yankee fans don't feel like their players are getting enough attention. So I'm always up for that.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, Judge was phenomenal last year. He was certainly a very strong case for him being the MVP. Like, I don't think anyone could have complained had he been that, but he was a complete one-off, which is, you know, it's what Otani is. I just feel it's a bit of a shame that people can't look past the end of their noses. And when I start going on about why Chris Sale should be AL Cy Young, you can feel free to call me a hypocrite. It's all right, I'm not going to do that. I'm actually not going to do that. What about the other awards? Are there any that you guys have a specifically strong take? I imagine that, Ben, you're going to go strongly into bat for Jacob deGrom, as you've already intimated.
Yeah, I think deGrom, I don't know many people would argue with me on that now. I think there was an argument maybe a month ago that Scherzer and Nola were going to give him a run for his money, especially if either of them led their teams to the playoffs. But I think at this point he's separated himself enough that bar a couple of absolute stinkers or Scherzer or Nola throwing a perfect game or something, he's gonna win it. I mean, the NL MVP is going to be an interesting race because there's no real standout candidate. Trevor Story.
Trevor Story. I was going to ask, are there any good players in the NL? Seemingly not.
That's the thing. It took months for anyone to really come out. I mean, Matt Carpenter, who was, if I remember correctly, pretty rubbish in April, has been probably the leading candidate for the last month or so. And there are a bunch of guys who have had late season surges and put themselves into the argument. But that for me, along with AL Rookie of the Year race, will be the most interesting one. I think NL Rookie of the Year will be interesting too. I know Darius has got an opinion on who should win that, and I think I'm going to agree with him, but that will be a tight one too.
Who is the NL Rookie of the Year, Darius, then?
Well, I mean, for a long time, I think it was Juan Soto, no questions asked, and then Ronda Cunha went on this tear. He had his, you know, hitting a home run every day before Jose Urania plunked him. but that really kind of brought them up, and they're pretty much neck and neck now. So I think Acuña might win it now because I think people maybe view him as a little bit more of an all-around player. He is a centre fielder. I don't think the defensive numbers like him that much, but I think he's still a much better defensive player than Juan Soto is, who's playing a corner. I think Soto is the better hitter right now, but I think Acuña has probably done enough, especially considering he was the one who kind of came into the season with that expectation that he would be Rookie of the Year. I think that he might just get it, especially with the Braves as well, looking very likely to win the AL East. I think that will probably influence the minds of at least a few voters.
Yeah, the Braves are going to win the AL East, out of canter. What about that prediction? We've had we didn't actually touch on it, the terrible David Wright prediction from our friend David Tate, who said that he was going to hit the winning run in the World Series. He might hit the winning run against the Marlins when they give him a meatball down the middle of the plate, David. But, you know, you'll have to take what you can get. But an even worse prediction was our dear friend Carlos Peña saying that the Phillies were going to win the World Series. Maybe he put the jinx on them. Maybe that was it. yeah, I think you could make a case for either Soto or Acuña. I think the fact that Soto is, 14? Should probably count in his favour as well. He's even younger than you, Ben.
I was watching the Nats highlights, and they pointed out that Soto just matched his age in home runs last night. On an unbelievable, they could not literally describe how fast he got his bat around on the pitch he hit for a home run last night. He is an incredible player. So yeah, as many home runs as years now for Juan Soto.
There you go. Maybe you should get him out there as your wingman, Ben. Maybe that's the future for you. You and Juan Soto.
I think we get on great. Similar talent.
Yeah, absolutely. unquestionable that you're basically just the same person. Brothers from other mothers, as the cliche would have it. What about the AL? These AL MVP is just a whole can of worms. My hunch at the moment is that it's going to be Alex Bregman. He feels like he's got that late season momentum. He has unquestionably been fantastic, but it feels as though he's kind of got the Astros on his back at the moment. Not to say that they haven't got a team full of good players, but he's sort of carrying them to the end of the season. Everyone's talking about how brilliant he's been, how he's almost unprecedented for a player of his age, how he's doing things. The last player that did this was A-Rod, and look what happened there. It just feels like the sort of popular winds of opinion are with Alex Bregman, and they were with Mookie Betts earlier in the season. I hasten to add, as I must as a Red Sox fan, that there is still 2.2 Fangraphs WAR between them, and that Betts is still 32 points ahead by WRC Plus, but you know, stats aren't everything. It feels like the conversation is trending in Bregman's direction. Ben, do you want to offer me some sucker that it is going to be Betts' award this year, or is he going to get pipped at the post again?
If I were a betting man, I think I'd put my money on Betts, but it is really close. And the narrative argument, I think, definitely leans towards Bregman in the way that he's helped that team out when they have had injuries and struggles on offense. He's been phenomenal, and it's not a knock on him, but I just think Betts' sort of consistent brilliance, you know, the last 3 years, never mind this year, 4 years maybe even, and the fact that the Red Sox are going to end up winning 110 games, maybe more, the best player on the best team, unless JD Martinez wins a triple crown, and then you've got that whole argument. So yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one, actually. These last 2 weeks, I think, will actually decide who wins it, in a way.
Yeah, it'd be a shame for Jose Ramirez, who it feels like everyone's sort of forgotten about him, because he's not the marquee player on his own team, even. And yet he's having the best season of any player on the Indians, Darius, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And I think he has just slumped at the wrong time. I think his home run that he hit last night was his first for at least a couple of weeks, if not longer. So that's kind of really taken him away, just because Betts has been so good. And obviously we haven't even mentioned Mike Trout, which feels a bit silly, but I think...
8.6 war, Mike Trout. Unbelievable, Jeff. Whilst we're on the Sky Sports Soccer Saturday.
So, yeah, I mean, when I spend a lot of time talking about these things to fantasy players, and so actually I hear Jose Ramirez is really underrated, to the point where it's gotten a bit like the whole, do you remember the old Claude Makélélé thing? I think he was the one who really started this off. He was so underrated, he became very overrated by the end of his career. So in fantasy circles, it feels like literally everybody you talk to says, oh, Jose Ramirez is underrated. But I think you're probably right amongst the general populace that Lindor is the recognisable player on that team, and that people still don't really give Ramirez the credit for what he's done. But I'm with Ben, I think. I think Betts has got it now. I know Bregman's had an unbelievable season, but I do think Betts is far enough ahead. I mean, he's going to win the batting title, I think, which even the old school voters are going to like. And it was, you know, the last time Trout won it, we kind of all had all this hand-wringing about, oh, well, Trout's the best player, but the Angels are terrible and they're not going to be in the playoffs, so he isn't going to win the MVP. And then he won comfortably. And I think maybe we've just kind of shifted a little bit. The voting pool is changing. We have maybe moved away from those years where the obvious candidate doesn't win. And I think Betts is starting to look like the obvious candidate to me. He's both leading the league in WAR, and he matches all the things that maybe the slightly more old school voters like, with the batting average and being on the team that's actually made the playoffs. So yeah, I think Bregman has a case. I think Ramirez has a case. Trout obviously has a case, but it's Betts for me.
Thank you. I'm pleased to hear it. What about the Cy Young, where Chris Sale's gammy shoulder has surely knocked that on the head, and I think probably understandably and rightly so. So I'm gonna throw a name out there. It's the man who didn't make the All-Star game. Until he was an injury replacement, Blake Snell. I think Blake Snell should be the AL Cy Young. I think he's been outstanding all season in a pitching rotation that, as we know, has been something of a mixed bag. And he's really anchored that absolutely incredible, fantastic, and really fun to watch Tampa Bay Rays team over the course of the season. I was reading this afternoon that alongside DeGrom and Sale, he's going to pass 200 strikeouts and 200 ERA plus, so that's 100% better than the average pitcher this season. He will be one of not very many players to do that. I think it's about 30 who've done that ever. There are going to be three of them who do that this season, which is just how ridiculous pitching in the AL, pitching in the MLB is at the moment. By the way, of the 30 people who've done that, seven of them are Pedro Martinez, which is just a reminder of how ridiculous he was. Anyone want to talk me down from Blake Snell? Is there anybody else in terms of the AL Cy Young? Obviously, Verlander, Kluber, still in the conversation. Gerrit Cole has probably cooled off a little bit. But it's amongst those five, really, isn't it, Ben?
Yeah, it is. And it's another really hard one to call, because I think Sale's undoubtedly been the best pitcher on a per-inning basis, but I saw something that said he might not even qualify for the ERA title unless he pitches a certain number of innings in the final couple of games, which obviously would be an argument against him. I'm not sure he's been that much better than the rest of the field to make up for that. Then among the rest of them, you've got Cole and Verlander, who will probably split that vote in a way because they're both great pitchers who held off a little bit of late on the same team with really good counting stats because they've been workhorses all season. And then you've got, I think Snell's got the best argument in terms of pitching down the stretch because he's been fantastic. Like last 10 games or so, he's been lights out.
Nice.
Severino's been rubbish recently. I've seen a lot of angry Yankee fans not liking Severino recently. Trevor Bauer's been injured. So yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem like there's anyone like running away with it at the moment. So I think Snell might be a really nice dark horse candidate if Verlander and Cole split that workhorse vote.
Yeah, give it David Price, actually. I've changed my mind. The big man's back. He's the new CC Sabathia, and those 4 years at $30 million are going to be a complete bargain, is what I'm telling myself. Darius, what about you? Have you been impressed by what you've seen with Blake Snell?
Yeah, I'm being carried by Blake Snell on a fantasy team, so I follow his progress on a regular basis. So yeah, I've been watching him all season. I was pretty keen on him coming into the year, and yeah, it's turned out very well. This one is really interesting to me because of the innings thing, and I think Sale, even if he does make it to the ERA title, ERA qualifier, he's only just going to make it, and I think this was supposed to kind of be a Sale versus Bauer race anyway. And Bauer got hurt as well. And so I think comparing them to Cole and Verlander especially, it's a pretty interesting conversation because how do you weigh that? Those guys are probably going to have made 6-7 more starts by the end of the year. They may easily pitch 50 more innings than Sale does. And so I think that might give them the edge. And I kind of think I'm kind of leaning towards Cole. Just because, you know, Verlander has got one. I think there might be some temptation with... You know, we've seen Verlander do this before, but Cole stepped forward to the Astros, even though they've essentially had identical seasons results-wise. I think that might just make people a little bit more inclined to give their votes to Cole. And I will point out that some people are going to give at least down ballot votes to Edwin Diaz because everybody loves a dominant relief season.
Yeah, he should have been in the ones that I mentioned, actually. Forgive me. Forgive me, Edwin, for I have sinned. The last of these that I want to have a quick conversation about before we move on to listener questions is AL Manager of the Year. And the reason that I want to do that is because it's much like the one we've just been having about the Cy Young. You could go one of two ways here. You could go with Alex Cora, who's already won 100 games and could, as Ben said, win 110. Or you could look at what someone like Kevin Cash has been doing with essentially nothing, doing this reinventing baseball with the opener, getting incredible performances out of nothing guys like Daniel Robertson and Joey Wendell, and picking guys up like Malik Smith, who looked like they were sort of drifting to be 1.5 war players for the rest of their careers and getting really good seasons out of them. And then the third one, who I think you've got to throw in there, is Bob Melvin of the Oakland A's, who goodness only knows what he's doing with those pitches. I mean, he's breaking them all, but then he's finding more of them. Their season has been absolutely remarkable. And yeah, of course, he has been carried by our Lord and Savior's second coming, Matt Chapman, to some extent. But he hasn't been the only good thing about the Oakland A's. I don't know if you guys had a favorite there, because that is really like choosing between, you know, Monster Munch and quarterbacks, Ben. You would know about that, being a Crisps fan.
Big time. I think Cora will win it just because the Red Sox have been all end up being so much better than any other team in the AL by the end of the year. And being a first-year manager, he's kind of got that narrative going for him about you know, taking the team and turning around, turning into a super team. So I think he will win it. But I think it's worth having an argument about the effect that guys like Kevin Cash and Bob Melvin have had on their teams, because there's two, you know, low-budget teams who at different points this season looked like they were dead and buried, and who here we are sat in late-ish September and they're well in the running. One of them almost certainly going to make the playoffs. The other one needs a bit of a miracle. But yeah, both of them have done fantastic jobs with their teams. It's hard to quantify manager value, but everything that we've seen them do with the Rays, with the opener, with the A's finding value in players that no one expected them to, I think, point to those guys being pretty damn good at their jobs. So I think Cora will win it, but I think it's worth a definite hat tip in the direction of Melvin and Cash.
I obviously love Cora. I think he's been absolutely amazing. But I think if Kevin Cash doesn't win it, it'll be a complete joke. The Rays put their best hitter on waivers and gave him away to the Pirates on the verge of the season at the very end of spring training. They traded their ace at the deadline and the team got better. Now, we're going to possibly talk about whether that was the right move from a club point of view and whether their GM deserves a pat on the back. But what he's wrung out of absolutely nothing has been absolutely incredible, Darius. Do you not agree with me that I'm sort of taking off my biased Red Sox hat here? Someone give me some credit.
Yeah, I think if you're going to say who visibly can we see doing the most managing, I mean, I think it's got to be Kevin Cash, hasn't it? Because he has to make moves on a near constant basis, and he's done a lot of innovative things, obviously. I mean, you can debate the wisdom of having Jose Alvarado at first base and Sergio Romo at third base, but it's happened. It's been out there. It's been entertaining. And so I don't know if that counts. I think the great Sam Miller has talked before about the impossibility of trying to figure out exactly how people decide the manager of the year. And there doesn't seem to be like a great way to do it. I think if you're talking about the guys who've exceeded expectations with their teams, I guess it's true of all three of them, really. Even Corey, you know, if you say the Red Sox are going to be a 95-win team, well, there might be a 110-win team, so you can't really say that he hasn't exceeded expectations there. But I think from what the Rays did, or all the things that you listed, and Cash actually having to do all these creative things, then he seems like a strong candidate. Melvin, I think people are still a bit baffled about the A's. They like to platoon. I do like Melvin as a manager. I think he does some creative stuff, and I think he actually does some pretty sensible stuff as well. But in terms of the rotation, I'm not sure that people can say specifically, oh, well, this is because of Bob Melvin, as opposed to the A's just managed to find Edwin Jackson for free on one of like the 6 week stretches when he's been good. I don't know how the voters separate that out. So I think Cash would certainly be a worthy winner. And there are probably plenty of behind the scenes things that, you know, the people who vote on these are going to pick up on that we never get to see. But they seem like three pretty good candidates for it.
Indeed. So come at us with your own hot takes, listeners. I hope that the heady and hearty Rays contingent of listeners that we have, who have on occasion come at me with a barbed tongue for my disgust towards their ridiculously awful stadium, are listening and give me an appreciative nod for fighting the corner of Kevin Cash. We're not going to dally too far away from what the Rays have done this season, because we're going to move on to listener questions now. The first one is from Mike Ivory, and Mike wants to know, what was the worst summer move, by which I think you mean sort of a deadline move, either of the deadlines, not only how the player has performed since the move, but what the team had to give up to get him. And he's rather answered his own question here by saying Archer to the Pirates immediately springs to mind. That is the right answer, Mike. I don't know if anybody else wants to put any others forward.
Yeah, I mean, Mike did answer his own question there, really, I think. I'm not sure we can disagree with him too much in that regard. They've kind of just keep looking better and better with it. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that would beat that, really. So,
I mean, he's been awful. And the two headline prospects that they got back for him have both seen playing time, haven't they? Meadows and I forget which of the pitchers it was.
With Shane Bowers, I think.
Bowers had, yeah, it wasn't Bowers. It was the other one. Who was the other one?
Baz, I said, not Bowers.
Baz, yeah, sorry, yeah. My bad. Yeah, so it's definitely that one. You could argue that the Jalen Beeks for Nathan Eovaldi trade was not exactly an equitable swap, particularly after Nathan Eovaldi's two first incredible starts, in which he had an ERA of zero. And Beeks was poor in his first couple of stints, but then he played a big part in the Red Sox barely scoring a run off the Rays in their most recent series. So yeah, he looks like I think he's going to be a good pitcher for them. Jalen Beeks, I think he's a decent pitcher. So that could be one too. Eovaldi's going to be fine out of the bullpen for the Red Sox, I think, but rather a big price when you're giving away what's essentially a number four starter with 6 years of team control for 3 months of a man who's basically going to throw 10 serviceable innings out of the bullpen over the course of the offseason. But hey, Dave Dombrowski in it. Next question is from Ben Salvi. McCutcheon was made to look like a teenager after the Yankees made him shave after the trade. Can I just say that just was awful. I felt physically ill seeing that. I feel physically ill seeing everyone have to shave apart from Lance Lynn because he just looked so sad and it made me chuckle. But McCutcheon was a particular kick in the guts to see him without a beard looking handsome as heck. But that's not the crux of Ben's question. He isn't asking, is that the stupidest thing ever? Because, of course, the answer is yes. His question instead is, if you ran a major league ball club, what unique rule would you impose, Ben?
I haven't really had a chance to think about this one. So if Darius has got one, I'll let him go, and then I'll try and think of a really, really funny one to overdo him with.
Yeah, I do have one.
Free crisps roll, yeah.
I do have one. And my in sort of a complete about-face from all the stupid rules that often get brought in with these kind of things, I would actually make everybody do a bat flip after they hit a home run, and they would have to practice their bat flip celebrations. And they would be benched if they didn't bat flip properly, because we want to see bat flips. So that would be my rule.
Love that, Ben. You're going to have to go some way to best that one.
Yeah, he's done well there, hasn't he?
he's done you up like a kipper, son.
He's sold me down the river, okay. I'd probably... if I was just like actually being serious, I'd probably initiate a rule about getting the players to interact with the fans a bit more. I always like seeing the videos of players like playing catch with fans before every half inning. I think Judge is really good at doing that. Mm-hmm. So as much as possible, getting players to do that. No actual warming up, just warming up with little kids. And that'll do.
Yeah, I like that one too. My unique rule at my major league club would be I would pay a living wage to minor league baseball players, which would definitely be unique.
That's very unique.
And I'm going to bat flip on that one as well and walk off myself. Next question is from Alexander Wist. Has the era of big free agent pitcher contracts gone with the bad return for Yu Darvish at $126 million, Jake Arrieta at $75 million, and Alex Cobb at $57 million? Still expect a big payout the size of Yu Darvish. Sorry, I thought my mic had gone then, but it's all right. It's all safe. I'm going to discount Alex Cobb from that group because that was just bloody stupid. That was the Orioles panicking. No one's going to give a pitcher like Alex Cobb $57 million ever again. So I think we should take him out of that calculus. But are Yu Darvish and Jake Arrieta going to be the last couple? I think it's arguable that they got a rather poorer return than anyone would have anticipated, and that the era of free agent pitcher contracts being ridiculous ended with David Price and Zach Greinke, really.
I think the caliber of the players maybe hitting free agency was not quite the same as what those guys were when they hit it. Darvish obviously had some questions hanging over from the World Series and obviously has some injury issues that aren't yet resolved. So that has kind of played out. And obviously teams are always going to be wary of pitchers getting hurt. But I think if you see a pitcher the caliber of Scherzer, of Kershaw, of Zach Greinke, who's also on a huge deal hit in the market, I don't know that many teams are going to hold off from paying out the big bucks unless we see a continuation of last season's off-season trend and that money doesn't come at a level that we were expecting. The class this offseason doesn't look great either. There's an argument to be made that Patrick Corbin might be the best starter on the market this offseason. So I think you probably won't see a massive free agent contact this winter as well, but there are great young pitchers. I mean, if maybe Blake Snell continues what he's doing, or Trevor Bauer hits free agency on the kind of form he showed this season, I think you could easily see another massive pitcher contract given out, you know, $35 million a year, which would be entirely plausible to me in a few years' time. So that wouldn't surprise me at all.
Yeah, Ben, any further thoughts? That all sounds sage and sensible to me.
Yeah, it was very sage and sensible. And yeah, I think it's a fair point. The last year's free agent class for pitchers wasn't a vintage, and this year doesn't look like it will be either. Corbin will be an interesting one because he's youngish hitting free agency for a pitcher. So I think he'll get quite a nice deal compared to what we might imagine in a fairly shallow market. But yeah, I mean, if you look at guys, Greinke maybe hasn't quite lived up to his contract, but he by no means has been a bust. And Scherzer, if anything, is probably being underpaid, even on his ridiculous contract, given how good he's been for the Nationals. So I think there will be teams out there who, when they see a guy of that caliber hitting the market, will be happy to open up the checkbooks. But I think certainly guys like Darvish are going to make teams wary of pitchers with injury issues or with poor seasons leading into their free agency, because you don't want to be that team that give a player a 7-year deal and then watch him go boom.
Or turn into the new CC Sabathia, like David Price. Question from our good friend Baseball Brit. I'd love to hear the Batflips guys come to an agreement as a group on how each round of the postseason will play out. And this is where we've got to be glad that Tom's not here, because he would just be saying teams with Clay Buchholz and Wade Miley on will win, which obviously... it's not true. We could do a whole podcast on this, I think. This is quite a hard question
Joey. I was going to say there are quite a few spots that have definitely not decided yet in the National League. So it seems pretty fraught to try and predict that bracket when we could easily see any of the Cubs, Cardinals, Brewers, Dodgers, Rockies, Diamondbacks not make the playoffs. I think it's entirely plausible that, two of those six teams essentially have to not make the playoffs, and we have no idea who it's going to be right now. So I think maybe this is an end of year type topic once we actually have the field set and we can do our predictions, at least knowing who the teams that have made the playoffs will be.
I think that's fair. I think we're going to take a mulligan on this one for now, Joey, but we will come back to it, and we will predict that the Red Sox will beat the Rockies in four in the World Series. I can't wait. Next question is from Rob DeVera. As it stands, which team would be most depressing to be a fan of going into next season? The Kansas City Royals. Next question. Anybody else want to argue that it is anybody other than the Kansas City Royals? I think it could be the Orioles, but the Orioles have seemed to... my argument for it being the Royals over the Orioles is the Orioles do seem to have recognised that they're at the bottom and they're going to try and do something about it. Not quite sure the Royals are there, and there's just nothing. There's nothing there to deal. Anyone disagree?
I mean, Rob suggested the Giants, I think, as well. And the Mariners.
Yeah, that was clearly pushing your buttons. I mean, the Giants are going to be pretty awful.
Yeah, I'm in the position where I don't think it does depend how you want to interpret depressing, but as somebody who's watched my team win three World Series within the last decade, I'm not sure that I'm really there. You know, the Mariners, I could see from a different perspective because they looked so certain to be in the playoffs, and now they're what, 9 games back, I think it is. It's not even been close in September, which is, I'm sorry, Mariners fans, bringing this up, must be quite... depressing thought. I think when we talked about this on our roundtable back in June, it kind of seemed like, oh, maybe the A's can make a game of it, and now it's completely the other way around. So I can see that being a bit depressing, especially with them having an aging team and not a great farm system. But yeah, the Royals just, they don't seem to have recognized that. Even the Orioles, as you say, have kind of gone, oh yeah, maybe we should do a bit of a rebuild. I think didn't Dayton Moore say we kind of expected to compete this year a couple of months ago?
Then he said at the trade deadline, we're going to try and compete next year. No, you're not.
With who? Yeah, maybe. I don't know if he's looked at their team. I can't tell. So, yeah, I think the Royals are a good choice.
Any more from you, Ben? I mean, the Mets, obviously, but other than them.
Yeah, the Mets are going to be a depressing team, but that's no change there. I don't know if you guys saw the Mariners playoff probability chart, but it was one of the most depressing things to see. It started out really low and then went up to close to 90%, I think, at one point. And then it's just been steady downhill ever since. It's like the world's saddest mountain. So poor Mariners yeah, fans are going to have absolutely nothing to look forward to next season. But yeah, Orioles, Rangers aren't going to be a great team to support next year, I don't think. And Marlins, are they ever a good team to support? No offense, Marlins fan.
Well, they've got some all right players. They got some good players back in deals who are going to be all right, I think. You know, Brinson and Dietrich and players like that. But yeah, in broad terms, the Marlins are going to be pretty naff. The other point to make about the Mariners as well is that they're let us not forget that they're not maybe they're one of their two greatest pitchers of all time. Arguably, their greatest pitcher of all time is clinically dead. So. You know, it's not been a good season for the Mariners, bless them. I don't know if Felix is going to be back next year.
Still the best team in Canada. Still the best team in Canada.
What's happening, Darius? I was
just trying to insult the Blue Jay fans, really. But
well, yeah, they could be a depressing team to follow next year. But at least I'll have Vlad Guerrero Jr. Now the service time clock's been properly reset.
Give him one more game in the minors.
Yeah, they'll probably keep him down in the minors. Good work from Mark Shapiro. Next question from certifiable idiot Tom Pringle. What do I assume that means a monetary value? What do Clay Buchholz and Wade Miley sign for next year and with whom? I mean, for goodness sake. Wade Miley, I think, will pitch for the Brewers again next year. He'll probably get 2 years and about 8 million, something like that, because they need pitchers because they don't have any. I genuinely think Clay Buchholz could be an interesting commodity to find. It's going to be one of those that, you know, Buster Olney's going to sneak a tweet out the morning after the World Series saying, keep an eye on the Buchholz market. You know? Just know it's going to happen. Does anyone want to stick a contract out there for Claydro and tell us what he's going to get?
Clay Buchholz has kind of got a bit of the Rich Hill thing to me. Like, you know, you kind of just thought he was done and suddenly he appeared again out of nowhere. And now we've seen like this half season of brilliance. I could kind of see, I would want it to be like incentive laden, I think still, but I could kind of see somebody giving him like a 3-year deal. Like, what did Hill get from the Dodgers? Like 3 and 39. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody gave him something like that, maybe with some of that money coming from performance incentives.
Man, Tom's just, you know, climaxed, I think, at that. I was going to say maybe 3 years and about 25, perhaps, because, you know, when he was at his best, I mean, he was always injured, but when he's at his best in Boston, he was such a good pitcher. And he's been that good this year, the second half of the season for the Diamondbacks. Lest we forget, he was released by the Royals. I mean, that's another reason why the Royals are having a depressing season. They let Clay Buchholz pass through their hands, and he turned out to be, you know, one of the pickups of the season. Ben, I don't know about you. Do you think there's going to be a developing free agent market for the old the man with the pine tar on his hat?
It might be. I mean, I'm sure you guys are probably spot on, but there's no way I'm the team giving Clay Buchholz 3 years. I mean, this is Clay Buchholz. Like, it's Clay Buchholz. I think he probably will generate a bit of interest as a guy who's underrated until, you know, everyone says he's underrated and suddenly he's overrated again. I could also see him being one of those guys who doesn't sign for ages and then spring training's coming and then spring training starts and he ends up having to sign like a 1 year decent AAV deal and kind of prove that it wasn't a fluke. Just based on what we've seen in the last couple of years in free agency where pitchers like him who are good but maybe a little bit too many question marks tend to have that happen. So I think he might be a guy who gets more than you think, but he might also be a guy who is sat next to the phone next March praying for a call.
Well, there you go, Tom. Job's comforter at the end there has given you something to chew on. I want him to end up with the Yankees because I want to see him clean shaven. I think it would be absolutely terrifying. He'll look even more like a meth head. Don't sue us, Clay. Paul Holland, with the young Braves and Phillies team in a position to contend in the AL East for a few years, what's the future for the Nationals now? especially if they lose Harper in free agency. I was thinking about this question quite a lot since Paul sent this at lunchtime. I think the Nationals are still really good. Like, they've still got Scherzer. They've still got Strasburg. They're still going to have Anthony Rendon. They've still got Soto. They've still got Adam Eaton, who's still recovering from a really long-term injury. Zimmerman has been, you know, he's at the end of his career, but he's still just about a serviceable MLB player. They're not far off being a good team. I think there is a strong argument that the biggest problem for them this year, apart from injuries, has been, I mean, Trey Turner as well, of course, a good player as well. The biggest is that the manager has just been poor. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Dave Martinez is moved along and you see another old hand back in there, maybe picking up. I think that I also think Bryce is going to end up back there, by the way. That's my hot take for the offseason is Bryce is going to be back in Washington, because those owners always find a way to dig down into the depths of their pockets. So I don't know, does anyone have any other thoughts? The Nationals are going to try and win again, aren't they? They're not going to tear this down.
I think as long as Max is at the top of that rotation, they're going to keep going for it, and he shows no signs of slowing down. And they have some very nice young players, both in the majors and on the way. You know, we're expecting to see Victor Robles more this season. He is now back up, but he got hurt and we didn't really get to see him. And now he's going to be in the outfield with Soto. Carter Kieboom's very highly regarded prospect. He should be up at some point next year, I think. And so that would give them a boost for at least a month or two, I think. You mentioned Turner. I think there's plenty of pieces on this roster with Scherzer and Strasburg at the top of the rotation that they're not going to sit back and think, oh, there's no way we can contend. Especially the Braves have certainly impressed this season, but they've still got a very young team, and I think there's some variance there. I don't actually know what they're going to do with all their pitching. They have way too much. At some point, they're going to have to figure out which of it is actually good, and that might lead to a few growing pains. I think that they will be okay. I think they'll be contending again next year. I think they'll certainly make some off-season moves, whether that is to bring back Bryce, or if they don't manage to land him, then I think they'll spend that money somewhere else.
On Clay Buchholz and Wade Miley, perhaps, because they will have a rotation, thinner rotation. Ben, I guess you're probably in a similar place on that, because the Mets and the Marlins are still going to be terrible, and it doesn't
yeah, no, the Mets will win 90 games next year. They'll all stay healthy next year. I think they can't really afford to blow it up, because they've got too many talented players on big contracts, and as Darius said, they've got some pretty talented young players coming through too. But it's going to be an odd year. I mean, you don't feel like the Braves or Phillies are juggernauts at this point, and unless they make a big splash in free agency, I don't think they will be next year, even as their young talent improves. So it doesn't feel like it's a division that's lost before the season starts. So I think with a couple of decent free agency signings, whether it is Bryce Harper, who I just know is going to announce his free agency decision through a Players Tribune article. I can see it now. The kind of prima donna to do that.
It's going to LeBron it, isn't it?
He is. Our next chapter. So I can see them being competitive next year. And maybe with the pressure off, they'll play a little better. Who knows?
Is the title going to be Washington or something shit like that? My town. Vegas piss off. That's just going to be the title. Vegas piss off. Callum Cockerill, is G-Man Choi the people's choice for MVP? That's a very loaded question, clearly from a Rays fan. We've already talked about MVP. Is G-Man Choi making a late run? Certainly having a purple patch, isn't he?
Bit of recency bias to this one, but Williams Astudillo, or however you say his name, is certainly the people's MVP in my heart. He is so much fun to watch, both physical comedy-wise and also a very good baseball player. So people's MVP-wise, in a similar vein to G-Man Choi, I think he gets my vote.
Yeah, Williams Astudillo, the baseball player who never walks, of course. He never strikes out. Yeah, he always puts the ball in play. And he looks like the bastard offspring of Bartolo Colon and a turtle. Jack White.
I was going to say, somebody else posted a screenshot of him and he looked very like Jack White after his walk-off yesterday.
Yeah. Who was it? David Roth, I think we retweeted.
David Roth.
Saying, was there something along the lines of, I've never always enjoyed all of his work, but I always respect Jack White's ability to try new things. Yeah, so if you haven't seen that, that's an hour timeline. He's rather more, how do we put this politely, well-built than Jack White. Yeah, go away and check out Williams Astudillo if you've not already. He is an absolute treat. Mm-hmm. Jimin Choi, a close second in the People's Choice Award, I think, which seems to be who is quite a large man who plays baseball is the qualifying criteria for that. Bartolo.
You all know who my choice is, but unfortunately he's in the AL. If he was in the NL, then Matt Chapman would be the MVP.
Give it up.
That's not hype. That's just true. Matt Chapman's like the sixth best player in the AL, and he would clearly be the best player in the NL.
Stop going about Benjamin Netanyahu, Lynn. You're never going to meet him. Next question is from Russell Easton, recently of this podcast. What are your thoughts about the Josh Donaldson trade? And is it just sour grapes from the other postseason teams? So this is relating to the fact that Donaldson was traded on the day of the waiver deadline, and he was not fit to play, which he should be at that point. In order to for a trade to be affected, he was sent down to the minors. He hit some rather welcome home runs in the minor league playoffs. Imagine if you were the pitcher in the minor league playoffs, now stepping up to the plate is the bringer of rain, and he's going to hit you for a home run because you're 20. Poor guy, whoever that was. Any thoughts on Donaldson? It doesn't bother me at all. I just don't care. It's just one of those stories that, if anyone disagrees with that,
I can see why they would be annoyed. You know, if the Red Sox or the Astros are done having to face Josh Donaldson in the postseason, a healthy Josh Donaldson, then I'm sure that's pretty annoying. And I think they had to get pretty creative with the way the rules are set up. But at the end of the day, if they wanted to pick him up, then they could have tried to pick him up. I don't think that it's a particular problem. He was going to get moved, or he wasn't going to get moved. But I don't think anybody's done like some shady deal here or anything. It's just they had to get a little bit creative to get around what the technical rules are. But at the end of the day, they wanted to move him. The Indians wanted to sign him. It's not like they, you know, pulled off something secret behind the scenes that allowed the trade to occur. I don't think it's just the teams who are going to face him in the postseason. They're not really that happy that Cleveland managed to figure it out.
Yeah, maybe the sour grapes is that they all just weren't quite clever enough to manage to structure it, Ben, I would say. Would you?
Yeah, and it's just a really nice move for the Indians, isn't it? Anytime you can get an American League MVP at the waiver deadline for practically peanuts, and potentially slot a fully healthy version of that player into your lineup for the postseason is a pretty nice get. And I think there's an argument to be said that you know, it shouldn't be allowed, but that those are the rules, and the Indians took advantage of them, and any other team could have done the same. So I think it is mostly just sour grapes, and very nice for Indians fans.
Indeed. Astros Fans UK asks, which MLB teams do you want to see get the nod for the 2020 London series? And then which do you think will be? Ben, I guess you want the Mets and the Rockies, right?
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good.
A matchup to Kyle Freeland and Jacob deGrom.
The reigning NL Cy Young against the 2018 it'll be interesting to see who they get. I think teams I'd like to see, well, aside from the Rockies, would be probably, well, I want to see different teams to start with. The Red Sox and Yankees are great, but I'd like to see someone else. I assume it would be reasonably large teams. I think the Mets would be cool to come over as a New York team who have a reasonably large following here. I think a team like the Astros, being recent world champions, would be a cool team to get over here. The clubs are going to pack out any stadium that they're in, I should imagine. In terms of who I think it will be, I can probably rule a few of those out, because I think they're going to stick with East Coast teams just for the sake of travel ease, jet lag, all that stuff, which maybe narrows it down to 10 or so in the East divisions. So take your pick out of those, really. Maybe the Nationals, if they're not rubbish by then. Maybe the Orioles, if the Orioles have got better by then.
Orioles, Royals. You've had the feast, now have the famine.
The people's game. maybe the Blue Jays, actually.
Large yeah, that would be a good one.
That would be a nice team to get over. So, yeah, I'd hazard a guess at two East Coast teams, and any of those would be good fun.
Darius, I assume that your answer of what you want is going to be a Bay Area series. Matt Chapman takes on the Giants. The Giants yeah. versus the Giants.
Obviously, I'd love to see the Giants and Matt Chapman over here. I did wonder about the Dodgers as well with the way that Battlegrounds was themed, obviously, as Red Sox versus Dodgers. And they've already had one big rivalry. Why not have the Giants-Dodgers come over and play as well? But as Ben points out, the West Coast thing is certainly a complicating factor. And I did think of the Blue Jays as well. We know that they're quite well supported over here, and I wouldn't be surprised if they came up with the Blue Jays against another East Coast team to maybe promote that without having to overcome the 8-hour time difference that the Giants and the Dodgers would have to.
Yeah, something like Blue Jays and Braves would be a really, really fun matchup, I think, in a couple of years' time. But we'll see. We'll see. That's for another day. Okay, just a couple more questions. So a question from Ethan Bryan, who is a guy who's playing a game of catch with someone different every day and then writing it up. He did it with Joey, which is how Ethan has come to our attention and vice versa. So he asks, which team heading to the postseason is most likely willing to play catch? It's probably got to be the Indians, right? All those fun young players. Or possibly the Braves, actually. You could see Acuna and Lindor out there with Ethan tossing a few balls about, shagging a few flies. Still a phrase I feel mildly uncomfortable saying out loud. Maybe them. Anyone else want to offer any suggestions?
Yeah, I think Josh Donaldson was out playing catch with a small child before the game yesterday. So that's certainly a point in favour of Cleveland, I think.
And of course, as Ben's already pointed out, Aaron Judge does that regularly. But as we all know, he's not going to play again this season, which is a shame.
just when they lose to the A's in the wildcard game.
Yeah, they're going to lose to Trevor Cahill. something that we all thought was going to happen at the beginning of the season. Trevor Cahill's going to out-duel Masahiro Tanaka because Severino ain't not getting the ball in that game because he's awful, which is a shame. Right, last question from an ultimately inferior podcast to this one, Absolute Bunts. And this is just the caliber of question that you expect from these jokers. What is your favourite Ray? I mean, does anyone feel like we even need to answer that question?
I mean, it's clearly Manta, isn't it?
I was going to say my favourite Rays are Ray Stubbs, the former grandstand presenter, Ray Searidge, the pitcher whisperer from the Pirates, the Pittsburgh Pirates, although maybe what's he called? Chris Archer would tell us otherwise. And lastly, the Lemonhead seminal mid-90s album, It's a Shame About Ray. I don't know if Ben has any. Ray Stans from the Ghostbusters as well, as portrayed by Dan Aykroyd. Didn't like the cartoon version. Ben, any extension on any other favourite Rays for you?
Maybe Ray Mysterio, the wrestling dude who had that cool move. Or Ray Winston.
619, Ben. No, we're not having any bet in play. Come on.
This is a
family podcast.
I'm on ranker.com looking at a list of famous Rays. Who do you think is number one?
Is Ray Winston number one?
He's not number one, no.
Learn about baseball, lads. Nah.
I'm sort of getting having a Ray Charles, Bob Gibson kind of the Bob Gibson voice.
The Bob Gibson. Should we do the Bob Gibson voice on this?
I'm not sure I can do it now. I should have practiced.
I just wanted to rag them for not knowing who Bob Gibson was, but you know, some of us didn't know Bob Gibson. We all didn't know Bob Gibson was once. We've all got to learn somewhere. Ray Winston could be our version of Bob Gibson. Maybe.
That's probably.
How many fireballs is there going to be in this inning?
Can you bet on that? If you can, Ray's probably the person to ask, isn't he?
Is he on Twitter?
What's
maybe
that?
We ask him. So let's just start tweeting Bet365 every single day and do it in the patois of Ray Winston. How many fair boys is there going to be in his inning? And see if we get a response from them. There you go. Maybe Henry, that's a task for you. It sounds like something that you'd be very much into. So if you're listening, you go away and get on with that and tell us, come back and tell us how it's gone. On that note, I think it's time for us to sew this one up and put it to bed. So last order of business, as always, is to just ask you guys where we can find you on social, if anyone indeed wants to, following this farrago. So Ben, where can people find your output?
My witty banter can be found on Twitter at UK Baseball Blog. That's pretty much it.
That's it. And Darius, what have you got coming down your pipeline of hot baseball content?
Hot baseball content. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I'll be attempting to do more of a Brian Kenny impression from now on, I guess. So expect me to get very mad about Jacob deGrom not winning the Cy Young because of wins or something. And you can obviously find me over at Baseball Prospectus if you're into fantasy. Tomorrow I'm going to be telling everybody how to win their league in the last 2 weeks. So that's very important. Go and get your subscription if you haven't already. Read that. Lots more exciting stuff to come from me at BP over the off season, which is a little teaser. I won't say anything more right now. Keep an eye out.
Yeah, and you can find me. If you hear someone in the street doing a really bad impression of Ray Winston, that's you found me. Well done you. We'll see you again in a week or so. We've been a little bit longer this time, but we promise we will be back soon. Thank you all for joining us. Bye-bye.